We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. This is Radio Entrepreneurs from Davis Mom. And that means I'm here with Pat Clendenin, the talented and entertaining attorney that I work with on the radio show.
Thank you so much for the nice introduction, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Pat.
Great to have you here again.
Great. It's always a pleasure working with you. Very easy working with you, Pat. Is that your reputation?
It depends on who's I'm working with.
Yeah.
Usually opposing counsel doesn't believe that way.
Yeah, I bet. I bet you could be dogged. Our next guest, someone you know well, I want to make sure I get it correct, Peter Evans, that's the easy part, from NAI Hunneman?
Correct.
Great. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, Hunneman?
Sure. I started in the commercial real estate business in Boston in 1992 and started off as a leasing broker in the South Shore suburban marketplace and slowly transitioned over to the principal side of the business, the ownership side of the business. Was hired by Lehman Brothers to run their real estate portfolio in the Northeast. Then I transitioned over to Goldman Sachs and ran their Northeast real estate portfolio. And then went off and started my own company in 2004. And after we dwindled that company down, I transitioned back over to the brokerage side of things 3 years ago. And I'm a co-managing director and head of the downtown leasing group at Hunneman.
I'd love to hear stories, and Peter, I'd love to hear your story about how you got interested in real estate, especially something as complicated as Boston and greater Boston real estate.
It was kind of by accident, to be honest with you, Pat. My grandmother was a pioneer in the real estate business in the South Shore. She started a residential real estate firm in 1956. Wasn't a very popular thing for women to do at the time.
Unusual for any woman to be an entrepreneur at that time.
Correct. So she started a residential real estate business in the South Shore, and I grew up in the business watching her work. I got my real estate license when I was a sophomore in college, which was pretty easy to do in Massachusetts at the time. You didn't need to carry your license at a specific company, so she carried it for me. And after she passed away in 1972, we sold her business to Coldwell Banker, and I always stayed interested. After I graduated from college, I traveled a little bit, tried to decide what I wanted to do, and real estate always kind of pulled me back. So I was introduced to a guy by the name of Peter Brown, who was one of the partners at Peter Elliott in 1992, and I started working in the Dedham, out of the Dedham office in 92.
Is there a particular, you know, I know when I look at certain businesses, I think, oh, this one I can do with my eyes closed. Do you have a sweet spot that you just know you're better at than something else?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that the commercial real estate brokers in general are either landlord strong or they're tenant strong. So the landlord brokers understand the bricks and sticks. They understand how the buildings are built. They care about the HVAC systems, the daily operations of a building. Tenant brokers represent tenants. They represent law firms, emerging technology companies. Most real estate brokers like to have a 50-50 split on both. I have a preference for working on bricks and sticks. I like the way that the inner workings of the buildings, I like the financial modeling, I like the analysis that goes along with it, as well as the daily operational elements of the ownership side of the business.
So Peter, I've been here in Boston since 1993, and so I can legitimately say I'm Bostonian now after being here for so long, and I'm just amazed at what's happening in the greater Boston area for such a small footprint. Can you tell our listeners, can you rationalize what's happening in Boston in commercial real estate for our listeners?
Isn't this the hottest market in the country right
now?
Yeah,
it was actually just announced yesterday in the Boston Business Journal that it's the number one city for startups, which I think is, they've been in the top five for the last 5 years. There really isn't a rationalization that I can come up with. There's The dynamics of the commercial real estate market in Boston has shifted so much in the last 5 years that it's almost remarkable. Actually, it's unprecedented what's happened. The emergence of the Seaport, which 15 years ago had a Dunkin' Donuts and a Fidelity building and a hotel.
It was awful.
There was nothing there.
Parking lots.
There were dirt parking lots, right?
And I go to other cities that had huge built-up Seaport areas.
Correct.
Boston was nothing.
Correct. But I think that what happened is after the 2008 crash, you know, which was principally driven by the debt markets, it impacted a lot of the financial services and life insurance companies that had always called Boston their home, as well as the back office healthcare operations from Blue Cross Blue Shield, Harvard Pilgrim, et cetera. They had moved out of the city and moved to the suburbs to get to better parking and to better layouts on floors. And what happened is emerging technology companies started backfilling a lot of these spaces. And as a result, the seaport, the growth in the seaport has been principally driven by culture creation, which is, you know, Thomson Reuters was the only tenant, the first tenant to call the Four Point Channel their home. Their spaces are still ahead of their time today, even 20 years later. So the market in the seaport, I think, has changed the entire dynamic of what's happened downtown. And it's all principally driven by emerging technology companies that are coming out of the educational institutions in the city.
We had Tim Connolly, who is the chairman of the Mass Technology Collaborative.
Yeah.
And he had an interesting anecdote, which was unusual to me since I didn't grow up in Massachusetts. He said that we have a monopoly on fish, but that exactly what you said, the talent, the entrepreneurship, and the emergence of this collaborative economy is really driving a lot of what's going on in Boston. And so what are the tenants and the landlords demanding now in light of the millennial generation in terms of their workspace? Is anything new or novel coming out of the demands and what kind of workspace they want?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really about culture creation. It's a 24/7 work-life balance. I think that the millennials are driving that whole access to public transportation, access to amenities, access to retail, access to housing, affordable housing, which in Boston is a very challenging dynamic to try to accomplish. I'd say the biggest change that's happened in the last 5 years is the density levels for employee versus per square foot usage. So back in the 90s, early 2000s, law firms, for instance, we would figure out 250 square feet per person, and that's how you would back into how many square feet that a law firm would need to represent. And that takes into consideration conference rooms, meeting rooms, kitchenettes, et cetera. Today, the average square foot for density uses is around 150 square feet. State Street being on the low side at about 85 square foot per person. And the latest Goodman Proctor's most recent build out in the seaport, they're at about 180 square feet per person. So it's an incredibly different change. And that density levels have put a ton of pressure on the common areas of the buildings, elevators, restrooms, usage, common areas, lobbies, et cetera. So you could have literally as many as 10 people in 1,000 square feet in some situations.
But it is a different world because of technology.
Correct.
And the way people use space.
Correct.
I remember, when I first moved to Boston, 1981, before Pat, this building I'm in today is the place I worked on the 11th floor. It was my first job, and I was given a very large office. Right. I would never expect an office of that size today.
Yeah, I think that it's more open, collaborative space, and as a result of technology, the advancements in technology, specifically the cloud, there's no need for these large data storage closets to be on floors that have, supplemental air conditioning systems, et cetera. It's everything stored off-site. Law libraries virtually don't exist. I think they have them still. I saw one outside here, but
it's a little dusty, probably.
Probably, but most of the law libraries are done online now.
Yeah, I have this conversation with younger people as well because they automatically jump to the online, like the internet has all the answers.
Right.
And I'm sure there's a treatise or two or book that you rely on regularly. And I say, well, that's fine, but look at the books too, because books are still relevant. But my office size has really shrunk over the years too.
But it's not just that. I mean, and again, I'm not trying to divert you from your story, but
right.
Earlier in my career, if a client asked me a question, I'd have to go down, I'd have to go to the library the next day. I might spend the whole day in the library. Then I'd bring the books back to my office also. I'd write it up. The next week, I'd show up at the client's office with a typed out thing because I would give it to a secretarial pool.
Correct.
And I'd show up a week later. Now when the client asks me a question, if there's a group meeting, if I'm on a board of directors, I'll go onto my phone, I'll get my web browser out, I'll do some research, and somewhere within the next 5 to 10 minutes of the meeting, I'll say, well, listen, I've got the answer for you. I've saved two, three, four days that what used to take me, I hate to say it, over 30 years ago to do.
Right.
I'm not saying that I still don't have to look at books. I'm not trying to get away from that, but the internet has changed the way we use physical space.
No question. No question.
Peter, can you talk a little bit about, because it, over my legal career, there's been, in representing businesses, there have been a lot of businesses and service firms that have looked at 495 and Waltham and that kind of greater Boston area as locations, and it seems to have shifted where people want to be in the heart of Boston or on the edges of Boston. Can you explain what's happening there?
Sure, Pat. I think the dynamic of it's chasing the workforce. I think that you're finding that TripAdvisor built a large building out in Needham. The only way that they could build it was by building a 600 car parking garage. In addition to that, because everybody had to drive, there's no public transportation. Public transportation is critically driving the access to this qualified and labor pool. And, companies like Reebok moving into the city, into the seaport from Canton, and you've got...
They couldn't get people to want to work in Canton. 20 years ago, that's where people wanted to work.
That's where they wanted to be, right?
Right.
Parametric Technologies is relocating 220,000 square feet into the seaport. The dynamic is that you're going to continue to see that influx of companies that had always survived and, based themselves in the suburban markets. And that's driven by densities. So in the suburban marketplaces, you've got parking lots. And so an average parking ratio for a commercial office building that was built in the suburbs in the 80s is 3.5 cars per 1,000 square feet rented. If you're putting 8 people in 1,000 square feet, you don't have the parking ratios that you need. So it's actually driven by parking as well as by attraction to the labor pools.
It's really fascinating. I think it's just that the people want to be in the mix. They want to be where the action is. They want to be in the city. I don't know what it is. I mean,
well, it's empty nesters moving into the residential developments that are happening in Boston as well. I mean, you see people moving out of their homes in the western suburbs and moving into downtown Boston into these smaller micro units just so they can be closer to the action, if you will.
You're seeing a real shifting socioeconomic move into the city. You have problems with millennials. We get the best students in the world. The best of the best students want to live here. They want to recruit here. They want to live close to Boston. There's going to be high-speed transit issues. We have a lot of geographic issues we need to confront. It is a city in demand, and I think that's the point you're making.
Yeah, I think there's very few cities that are as established as Boston where you're actually seeing a changing skyline. It's very unusual to see it pick any city, even New York for that matter. The entire Seaport District, if you look at a picture from 10 years ago, it's a completely different landscape than it is today.
20 years ago, when you spoke to a European, a white-collar European, about doing business in America, they automatically thought of New York. Today, Boston is the city of choice.
Right.
It has the lifestyle of Europe. It's the city of choice for Israel, which is big number two on NASDAQ. It's funny. We have become the cosmopolitan city of choice for entrepreneurship.
It hasn't changed in its conservative nature about the way that it operates and the way that people live.
Or the way certain people dress. law firms still look like law firms when you walk into them.
I wore my cufflinks just for you.
I love those cufflinks. That's the first thing I noticed. Peter, if somebody wants to find you, how would they do that?
So we're located in the Seaport, coincidentally. We own our building at 303 Congress Street. We developed the building about 15 years ago. So you can reach us there at naihunneman.com.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure.
I want to thank you for being on the show. I hope you come back again. I think this whole discussion around this whole evolving real estate market in Massachusetts is very fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Great.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And,
thanks,
and I want to thank Pat Clendenin again. He's our co-host and the co-host with the mostest.
Thanks, Jeffrey, as always.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.